Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to present Scotty Barnhart, native of Atlanta, GA, and a member of Ebenezer Baptist Church, a trumpeter extraordinaire. And why do I say that? Because he's written a book called The World of Jazz Trumpet, A Comprehensive History and Practical Philosophy. And he's a philosopher as well. He's very acclaimed by all the trumpet players for some of the great things he's done. Presently, he's over the jazz department at Florida State University, if I'm not correct.
And professor of jazz trumpet. I'm not the chairman of the department.
Oh, professor of jazz trumpet. I apologize. Professor of jazz trumpet. But he's also over right now, recently appointed, after I believe leaving Finland, over the Count Basie band. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And yes. Scotty, you know, I just wanted to say I greatly admire you, primarily because you came from grassroots. I noticed that you first noticed the Count Basie band when it was playing at the Fox, went across the street, met everybody when you were real young, and you were like the, you know, Jesus leaving his leaving his mother and father. You went to perform miracles with the trumpet, man. But it's a pleasure to have you on the show here at Jazz Tones, man. And tell me some more about yourself. You know, the audience wants to know a lot more about, because you kind of stay, you know, you went to Florida and you traded us in for a Gator. You know, you got to stay with the Georgia.
I'm born and raised in Atlanta, Atlanta native, and, you know, grew up in Ebenezer Baptist Church, you know, with Daddy King as the minister. But I was young enough to be christened by Dr. King Jr. And my family has been in Ebenezer, man, over 100 years, I know. You know, so my mother knew him and grew up with him, and my grandfather and Daddy King grew up, and they were friends and all of that. So I basically grew up in the church, which was great, because I remember the first time I heard Basie, I said, oh, that's the same thing I hear in church every Sunday, with the M.L. King Choir, which was the smaller kind of like a gospel type of choir, you know, that we had at the church. Wow. And but anyway, growing up in the church, I started playing trumpet when I was 9, and in fifth grade at Terry Mill Elementary School, which is now, I think, it's a Performing Arts Academy or something like that. And with Mr. Stanley Gossier, who was my first trumpet teacher. And then I ended up going to Gordon High School, where I had probably my very first, most really, really important teacher who really kind of saw that I had some talent and actually threatened to take his belt off and spank me if I didn't go get a private teacher. And that's Mr. Gordon Boykin.
I need to meet him because he did a great job.
Hell yeah. Yeah, man. I wish we could do that again today, but they'll lock you up today for doing that. But man, back in those days in the 70s, man, if a teacher, you know, told you to do something, you did it. You didn't even think twice. So he said, man, you got some talent. You need to make sure it's refined and properly trained and all of that kind of thing. So it was really because of him that I probably ended up at the Basie concert. And I'm pretty sure he was the one that told me about it, I think. And so I went down to the concert. And the first one actually was at Druid Hills High School when I was, I think, ninth grade. That would have been 1979 or 80, one of those years. The second time I saw the band, which was I was a senior in high school, 12th grade at Gordon, and that was at the Fox Theater. That was the time that I met everybody. And, you know, even going up in high school, I was, you know, I went to summer camp at Northwestern, and basically Mr. Boykin saw to it that I got a private teacher, which I did. And all of these auditions I started going on, I started making first chair and everything, you know, and in all county and the district, and I made all state and all that kind of stuff. And then Florida A&M heard about me, I guess, and they came up and auditioned me and gave me a full scholarship down here.
So you became a Gator. You became a Gator. Again, you left us, huh?
No. I went to Florida A&M.
Florida A&M, okay. The Rattler, I'm
Florida
sorry.
But I teach at Florida State, Seminole, not the Gator.
Okay.
That's in Gainesville.
Okay.
Yeah. And so anyway, went to FAMU, got a degree there and all everything, and then the Basie Orchestra called, but before them, I was on the road with Marcus Roberts. For about 3 years, I guess.
Oh, you played
like
with Marcus as well. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that was before I joined Basie, yeah. Because I met Winton like in 1982, right after I saw the Basie band for the second time.
And Winton mentored you.
Yeah. He was always, you know, for advice, play over the phone for me and stuff like that. So we were real tight. We're still real tight. So we stayed in touch, man. As a matter of fact, the last concert that I played in Atlanta was with him.
Was with him.
February.
Right.
And
right.
In Symphony Hall.
In Symphony Hall, right.
Subbing. Yeah. And so anyway, he he put in the work for me when I started working with Marcus, where Marcus was looking for a trumpet player, I think, and went and said, "Well, this is cat down in Tallahassee, man." And Marcus and I hadn't even met yet, and we'd only lived like 5 minutes apart for like years.
Oh, that's interesting.
He finally met, you know, and went on the road with him, and then that Basie call, and the rest is kind of history. I guess I've been with the Basie Orchestra for 20 years now.
20 years. Let me ask you a question that's very vital. The audience would really want to know. You wrote the book. What inspired you to write the book? And you got endorsed by Clark Terry and Freddie Hubbard back in 2005 book.
Well, two things, really. One thing, I've always, in order to learn how to play jazz, you have to be a historian.
Yes.
There's just no two ways around that. You have to go through the lineage of each person on your instrument, as well as other instruments, to really learn what they did, and then you can try to figure out how to take that and learn how to play, you know? So one day I was giving a clinic at Georgia State University. It was a master class when I was on the road with Marcus. We were playing at Georgia State University, and I was giving a master class on the history of jazz trumpet. And I was playing, you know, I played like a Louis Armstrong solo, then I played a Dizzy Gillespie solo, then I played, I think, a Miles Davis solo and a Clifford Brown solo, all the way up to Winton. I was playing these solos for people to hear how each player took from the one before him and added a little and changed a little. And, man, this one guy stood up and said, "Well, you know, this is all great, but is this stuff written down anywhere?" You know, and that was the first time I'd ever been confronted with the fact that, you know what, we don't have this stuff written down, at least for jazz trumpet we don't. Mm. So that was 1991, I think, or 92. And so it stuck with me, and I started thinking a few weeks and a couple of months after that, I started thinking and said, you know what, we don't have anything written down. So luckily for me, I had started meeting a bunch of the, you know, the jazz legends on trumpet, Freddie Hubbard, Dizzy. I played at Carnegie Hall with Dizzy. I knew Winton, John Faddis, all these people. So I started realizing that I had a direct connection to these men and women eventually too that played jazz trumpet. So I just, one night I sat down and I was here in school and I said, let me see if I can figure out how many jazz trumpeters I know off the top of my head. And I wrote down 75 people.
75 trumpeters you know off the top of your head.
But after I started researching, I had a book.
Mm-hmm.
Then I knew. I said, okay, now it's just a matter of writing it in such a way that it comes from jazz trumpeters. That book can only be written by jazz trumpeters, not by a historian, not by somebody sitting in a classroom all day that's not on the road playing. So I wanted to make sure that it was told from our mouths, from the mouth of Freddie Hubbard, from the mouth of Clark Terry, Cleve Patterson, Maynard Ferguson, Winton, you know, Wendell Brunius, Cora Bryant, who was one of the first women that played jazz trumpet, Bobby Bradford, who was Ornette Coleman's first trumpet player. So I made it a point that I interviewed everybody I could interview, and I just tried to weave the story of jazz trumpet and weave it in with the history of America, because it's a major part of America. So that's kind of what I did, you know, and I hope to update it soon, add a few more interviews and everything. But that's kind of how I came up with writing the book, and it still took several years to do it. All together, from the time I wrote that first list of 75 to the day it was published, that was about, let's see, it was published in 2005, so that was about 12, 13 years, I guess, something like that.
It's interesting, you know, to talk to you, Scotty, because you bring the historical analysis of a musician and put it on paper so people can understand mm-hmm. from a musician's perspective. Most people mm-hmm. that are listening to writings, it's not necessarily from a musician's perspective. It can be from a critic's perspective or someone
exactly.
that's observing. When you're
exactly.
in, it's a whole different perspective. Like me being an on-air announcer, that I give you my perspective mm-hmm. versus mm-hmm. what somebody may think that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate the fact that you're able to leave some history to the young people as well as the audience for them to understand mm-hmm. the world of jazz trumpet. Mm-hmm. Most of us do not know what it is mm-hmm. for a trumpeter to reach certain heights. They don't understand mm-hmm. embouchure and some of the other
sure.
technical things that are there that you bring
sure.
to the forefront from each
sure.
individual performer in the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, man.
And it makes a difference.
Yeah, it does. I mean, that's why I just wanted to make sure that I let the people like Freddie and Maynard and Winton tell their story. That's why the interviews to me are the most important part of the book, because there's no disputing For example, when I asked Freddie Hubbard, I said, man, how did you learn how to play on chord changes so well? Because I knew nobody had ever asked him that. Because they weren't musicians that were interviewing him, basically, you know?
Right.
And he said, well, piano. So when I'm working with my students and talking to people when I'm giving lessons and that kind of thing, there is no getting around the fact that if Freddie Hubbard did that, you got to do the same thing.
You got to do the same thing.
There's no getting around it. That's why I wanted to make sure that I talked about those things. And Arvel Shaw, who I interviewed, who was Louis Armstrong's bass player, he made sure that I printed certain things in the books. Said, make sure you tell them what he did for the music. Make sure you tell them what he invented with it, which is the modern jazz solo. Make sure you tell them that. I even had an interview with one guy, one journalist, a critic, I think it was, and he actually said to me that Miles Davis did not have good technique on the trumpet. And when he said that, a couple of things happened. When he said the first thing happened, I wanted to reach across the table and knock him out. That was the first thing. But the second thing that occurred to me, I was like, man, it's people like this who don't play the trumpet, who have no idea about what he's saying. You're talking about one of the greatest musicians to ever live, and you can actually can be comfortable to sit here and tell another trumpet player that Miles didn't have technique. That's like me having a conversation with Joe Montana saying that Bob Greasy couldn't throw the ball properly.
Right.
What the hell is that?
Yeah, right.
You know?
But
so
see,
Freddie Hubbard, that was one of the things that a lot of them told me. Freddie told me, he said, man, these critics who've been interviewing us, they don't really understand what we do, so they're really only asking superficial questions. You know, maybe a question to get people in an argument or to pit one of us against another, but nobody has really asked pertinent musical questions, which is about like the movie Clint Eastwood made on Bird. They spent so much time talking about, you know, focusing on the drug thing that he got hooked on because he was in a car accident, that they didn't actually sit down and show him practicing, working on playing chords or something.
No, they don't show.
What he could have done.
No, they don't show you wit shedding at all. They never show the work that's going on to make you what you are. You know, they only see they think is the final. They want to criticize that. Moving on to Count Basie's band, you're going to be appearing at the Cobb Energy Center this Wednesday. And what are some of the great things that the audience can expect?
Well, they can expect vintage Count Basie. I mean, it's as simple as that. We're going to play things that go back to 1935. We're going to play some modern things. One of the last things that Thad Jones wrote around 1985 or 6 before he died. So we're going to play a good stand of about 50 years of music for sure.
Oh, wow.
And that's one of the things that I have to make sure that we do, is play a full spectrum of as much as we can. And the only drawback about Wednesday that we're only playing, like, all together by ourselves, I think, 6 tunes, because we got Janis Siegel and Kevin Mahogany. So it's not a typical full Basie concert where you get two full sets of just us, 50 minutes each.
It's interesting, but I still look forward to the swinging.
Oh, yeah. You better believe it.
No, definitely. I look forward to seeing you again, Scotty, because I haven't seen you in a while. You know, standing up for you.
Yeah.
You'll recognize my face because the last time I spoke to you,
okay,
I met your father. You know, your father was
there.
Yeah. So I had a chance to meet both of you.
Ooh.
It was over at the Martin Luther King Center for Social Change. You know, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And I look forward once again to you coming in Wednesday. I want you to keep swinging. And when you update the book, man, make sure that you let me know, because I think, ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the premier books on jazz trumpeteers, The World of Jazz Trumpet, A Comprehensive History and Practical Philosophy. And this is Scotty Bonhart that we've been talking to you. And I just want to thank you so much for taking the time out and your busy schedule.
Oh, it's my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And take care, and I look forward to seeing you Wednesday, my man.
You got it.
Take
Thanks,
care.
Man.
Peace.
Peace.